bombed buildings. There were loads of kids who played out then on the streets and in all the buildings that were bombed and being pulled down. They were all like Ingrid and didn't have dads. It was hot and it was summer, and sometimes they found dead people in old buildings, and sometimes they could smell them before they found them. There were old German tanks and wrecked cars everywhere. One day, five of them were playing in a back court of some of the flats where there were piles of stones and dust. They had chalk, and they were playing houses, and they chalked all the rooms on the floor, and Ingrid was the baby, and two older girls were the mum and dad, and another boy was the wee brother. One girl was running over a pile of rubble, and a bomb went off in it. There was a blast, and Ingrid got thrown across the court like a wee doll, and she couldn't see for the dust and smoke. Her cheek was bleeding and burning. All the other kids were dead. Some Russian soldiers ran in and rescued her and took her to the camp, and she got seen by a Russian doctor. He pulled a lump of metal about the size of a peanut out of her cheek, and then he stitched it and she screamed. Ingrid's mum got a job working for the Russian soldiers in their camp, cooking and cleaning, and she started being out all day and leaving Ingrid. And at night, she started going out too, with Ilya, and she was drunk a lot at work, and Ingrid could do what she liked. She sometimes stayed out in the streets with older kids who nicked stuff from shop or off the Russians from their camp. Ingrid was wee, and she could climb into places through small holes, and she looked really sweet and innocent, and they used her as a lookout while they burgled and nicked. One boy called Klausy, who was about 12, liked Ingrid and started looking after her and giving her food. He stopped other kids from bullying her, and he took her with them when they all went out burgling and nicking. Sometimes they got sweets from army stores or shops that had opened up, and sometimes they nicked cigarettes out of vans that were delivering stuff to the army camps. Klausy didn't have any parents, and he lived in a cellar with his brother, who was called Johannes, and they called him Hansi. And they were leaders of a gang of kids who all stayed out on the street all the time, nicking and begging and causing trouble. The other women in the block they lived in didn't like Ingrid's mum, and they used to spit on her and call her a Rabenmutter, which means raven mother in German, because they think ravens don't look after their kids and leave them in danger. As it got towards winter, Ingrid had to collect wood and make fires in the flat to keep warm, because there was no heating or gas, and they still had to get water from a pipe in the street. Her mum was there less and less, and when she was drunk. And then one day, she didn't come back to the flat at all. Ingrid waited in the flat for days on her own, and her mum didn't come. She went and found Klausy and the other kids and told them her mum was missing, and Klausy said she might have got murdered by the Russians because they raped German women and sometimes killed them. For 2 days, Ingrid walked round Berlin with Klausy and Hansi looking for her mum. They went to all the camps where Russians were, and they asked the soldiers if they had seen her. But the Russians couldn't speak German, and most of them chased them away or shouted at them. Then one day, she saw Ilya standing by an army truck and talking to some other soldiers. And she ran up to him, and she asked him if he knew where her mum was. And he laughed. And all the other soldiers laughed at her. And he gave her a piece of chocolate and rubbed her head and walked off. She stayed in the flat, and Klausy and Hansi came and lived there too, and they all slept in her mum's bed. There was no school or parents or anyone to tell them what to do, and they stole food or begged it and scavenged wood in the bomb sites. At night, they told each other fairy stories in the big bed, and Klausy cuddled Ingrid when they went to sleep. One day, some old men came to the flat and banged the door in. They were Polish, and they spoke German, and they were finding orphans to take to an orphanage. Klausy and Hansi didn't want to go with them, and Klausy said they were going to take them to Russia to work in mines, and the old men grabbed them both, and one grabbed Ingrid, and they carried them out of the flat. Klausy and Hansi got taken away and put in a big lorry they had outside. The man who had Ingrid carried her down the street and then walked and walked with her in his arms until they got to a big grey building next to a church, and then he gave her to a priest, and she had to sit in a big room with lots of other little kids. The priest and some other German women gave them bread and soup, and then the priest said a load of prayers, and they all got given a blanket and had to sleep on the floor. The next day, they all had to have a bath, and they all waited in line in their knickers, and then they got put in a tin bath full of grey, cold water, and a fat woman washed them with soap. They dried them all with rough towels and gave them new clothes. The girls had little grey dresses and a grey jumper and a wool coat and black berets to wear. They all got new pants and socks and they were all given a school bag that was made of canvas. Then Ingrid had to tell a big, ugly old man in a uniform her name and where she lived and her mother and father's name. She told him her father had died in the war and her mother had got murdered by the Russians, and the man put his hand on her cheek and smiled at her. They all got taken outside in a long line and all got into a big bus. There were about 70 or 80 kids, all wee and all wearing the grey coats and berets. The bus drove them out of Berlin, past all the buildings that were blown up and lines of people waiting for food, and past hundreds and hundreds of Russian soldiers and tanks and lorries and huge guns. They got into the countryside, and Ingrid had never seen the countryside before. All the trees were bare, and there were huge bomb craters everywhere, and grey snow. The bus kept stopping, and Russian soldiers got on and walked up and down and looked at all the children. The orphanage was a huge old building that looked like a castle by a lake, and there were Russian army men there in tents and burned out German tanks and cars. They all got taken into big dormitories with rows of beds and little tables, and they had to go to bed because it was so cold. The orphanage was run by old nuns who were angry all the time and shouted at them if they talked. They all had to go to mass and pray every day in a big hall. There were Russian soldiers there too, and they laughed at the nuns and smoked and talked in the mass. After a few weeks, they started going to school in the big hall every day. They did reading and writing in German, and they learned about Russia. And then one day, a big man came in and started teaching them Russian as well, and they had to learn a new alphabet and new words. The masses stopped as well, and they didn't have to go to church, and the priest stopped coming in to talk to them. And that was where Ingrid stayed until she was 17. She liked it there, and she had good friends, and she helped to look after the smaller kids. She was good at maths, and she learned about science and chemistry. She learned Russian, and she learned all about the Russian Revolution. And there were pictures of Comrade Lenin and Marx and Engels in the main hall, and a big painting of Russian soldiers liberating Berlin in the entrance hall. There was a picture of Comrade Stalin in the hall until she was 13. And then there was a picture of Comrade Khrushchev. At weekends, she went cycling with two girls her age called Irene and Anna, and they were in an organisation called the Young Pioneers, who were fighting to build socialism in Germany. Sometimes she went into Berlin to party meetings and it was all still bombed and there were huge gaps in all the streets where buildings had been. All the old buildings had bullet holes in the stone. In the street where she used to live, there was a new library and a university being built right where her flat had been. She didn't think about her mum or what it was like when she was wee then. She forgot a lot of things because she was young and very pretty. And she liked being German and building socialism, which meant that all the money was shared and there was no poor people and no rich people and everybody had a nice flat and a job and children went to good schools and got looked after properly. Ingrid told us all this while we were sitting by the fire in the snow and we listened. But when Peppa started yawning and her eyes started drooping, Ingrid said, "I tell you more tomorrow." I wanted to hear more about her and why she was living in the woods now. She had come across all Europe and she had seen her mum get raped and probably murdered, and she was still nice and she still looked after us. Chapter 11. Food. In the morning, it was really cold and Peppa and me stayed in bed and snuggled and talked. Ingrid got the fire going and brought us porridge with jam in it and our birch bark bowls. She said, "Soon we must go to the town and get food and carry it back. And I get letters from the post office. And I knew we'd have to go sooner or later, but I was worried if we all went we'd get seen and people would ring the police and tell about us. But I wanted to know what the police knew about us and if Ma was still in rehab too. So we talked about it and decided if me and Peppa dressed like lads and if we split up in town so we weren't together and then met up later when we'd done the shopping, we wouldn't get noticed." Ingrid said, "They all know me in the town. I was the doctor there once. They all think I am mad. People ignore me because I am old and mad. I also have money in a bank and I can get it and we can buy nice food. And I would also like to buy binoculars for you, Sal, and a proper knife for Peppa." So we both said, "Aye, all right." It was 2 miles to the road and then 4 miles to the town from where you came out, and there was a bus stop by the garage and Little Chef where you came out on the road. We took the backpack and the rucksack for the food, and Ingrid wore a big wide hat made of waxy cotton that looked like a cowboy hat. We pushed all Peppa's hair up under the rabbit hat, and I wore the beanie, and I looked like a lad anyway. I made Peppa wear her Helly Hansen in case it snowed or rained. It only took about an hour to get to the road, going down through the woods, crossing the river on stepping stones and then climbing up again over a ridge all covered in woods. We used mostly deer paths and tracks, and Ingrid knew the way. We came out right on the road, and it was a main one, and just up from us was the garage and Little Chef. We waited till nothing was coming along the road and then split up, and Peppa and Ingrid stood one end of the bus stop and I stood the other. No one else was waiting. We sat apart on the bus too. People might think Peppa was a lad going out with his mad granny, and I was just a lad going into town. The bus was empty apart from us. We all got off at the stop before the centre of town, and I waited at the bus stop, and Peppa and Ingrid walked in along the riverside and over the bridge that led to the main street. We were meeting back on the bridge in 2 hours. I waited for a bit, then walked in looking for CCTV cameras on the lampposts, but there weren't any. I went straight to the library, and the old man who spoke to me before wasn't there, and they ignored me when I paid and got an hour online. The headlines were still about the search for us and stuff about the continuing investigation, but they had got less and less. A few days before, there were ones that said, "Body in lock not connected to missing girls, say police," about a woman found dead in a lock in Lanarkshire, not being me or Peppa. There were some stories about sightings of us. One said we had been seen in London, and one had a bloody CCTV picture from Manchester saying we had been seen there, so that was good. I searched a lot of different names, including Robert, and there was a story about him having convictions for sexual offences against a child from when he was 23 and being on the sex offenders register. There was a story about an investigation in the social services over why they never knew anything about us or ever came round. I knew why. Because we never said or told. And Ma was just lucky nobody shocked her when she was drinking and not looking after us. And I was looking after Peppa and her. On the Police Scotland website, there was a full report of us missing and a newer picture with descriptions and the CCTV stills from Glasgow, but that was it. There was loads on Twitter still, all the same people posting, Ian Leckie and Mary, and then I found at Alison in the club, and it said, "Spoke to Claire, she's doing well in the rehab." And then ones from Ma from the past 10 days. My heart started fluttering, and it wobbled when I started reading it. I didn't even know she did Twitter. One said, "Praying still for my lassies, Sal and Peppa. Please contact me. I love you both." And then one saying, "3 weeks sober, one day at a time. I can't believe it. Cope with this with no painkillers." And then loads congratulating her, including Ian Leckie, going, "If you do the right thing, then the right thing will happen, Claire. Stay in there. Stick to the programme." And one yesterday she said, "I'm breaking all the rules here doing this, but I need to keep letting them know I am here and I love them. Sober, 24 days, God protect my babies." Then one came up while I was looking at her feed. She was posting right then. It said, "Coming up 4 weeks, no drink. It is a miracle. Now I need another one. God bring back my girls." I left the library and got a pasty and a can of Coke from Greg's and went and sat on the bench looking at the river. Then suddenly, Peppa came up and sat next to me. She said, "Give us some money. I want to buy Ingrid a present." I said, "Peppa, you're not meant to be with me. What if we get seen together? Or on CCTV?" She said, "Give us some money then." I said, "Don't nick anything. If you get caught, they'll know who you are. Go on, stop talking to me." I gave her 20 quid and she ran off into the town. I looked all up and down the main street and I couldn't see any CCTV, but they would have it in shops. There weren't that many people about, but the street was busy with cars and buses, and it was cold, and there was slushy snow now on the pavements. I was feeling all right, apart from being a bit scared about getting seen with Peppa. Ma had stopped drinking by the look of it, and she was getting looked after in the rehab, and the police were clueless about us. Behind the main street, there was a car park and a Tesco, and I went there and filled the rucksack up with food we needed. I got flour and rice and pasta and salt and a big tin of dried milk and oats for porridge and butter and cooking oil. Ingrid said we needed more soap and shampoo, so I got them and I got string. I bought some steak for her tea when we got back, and I bought apples and big bacon potatoes and then loads of cheese and tins of beans. Ingrid was going to get cake and sugar, and we had loads of tea still. After I'd packed it all in the rucksack, I walked back to the bridge and watched down the main street, and I saw Ingrid striding across the road from the post office and going into a shop, but I didn't see Peppa. I saw Ingrid come out of one shop and then go into the co-op. We all met up a bit later. I was standing on the bridge and I saw Ingrid and Peppa both walking up towards me. Then an old man who was walking a wee dog stopped and started talking to Ingrid. She stopped too and was smiling and talking to him like normal. Peppa crossed over and ignored Ingrid and walked on up towards me. She was carrying two plastic bags and drinking a can of Iron Brew. I walked on ahead towards the bus stop and kept looking back and saw Peppa coming along behind me. Then a bit further back, I saw Ingrid coming on the other side of the road. I suppose it looked normal and we didn't look like we were all together, but you don't know what people notice or feel like telling the police. At the bus stop, we all ignored each other and there was an old man and his wife there waiting too. Peppa kept looking across and catching my eyes and grinning at me, and I shook my head at her and I looked to see if the old man and his wife had seen, but they hadn't. Ingrid just stood at the end, straight upright, staring out along the road and ignoring everyone. She had Peppa's backpack on and it was bulging with stuff she'd bought. By the time we were all together on the path up to Ingrid's woods, it was starting to come dark and was getting really cold. Ingrid said, "I met an old patient of mine from a long time ago, and he was asking me about how I was and where I lived. I told him I was living in London and I was here on holiday. I said nothing about us and living here. I was rather surprised that he was still alive because he was a diabetic." And she smiled at us and seemed pleased. I said, "I found out a bit more. She's got sober and stopped drinking in the rehab. She's still in there and she keeps asking God to keep us safe." Peppa said, "If she is better, we can go and get her." We were climbing up a steep bit where the snow was undisturbed by animals or feet and it was crunchy. On some places the trees were so thick they were like a solid wall, but Ingrid knew how to worm through them in the little spaces, and we got to the top and started coming down into the valley where the river was. The trees were thinner here and bigger, and the valley swept down in a long slope towards the river, and there were wee evergreens in between the trees, and next to one was a big mound with new earth all thrown out of a hole and old dry grass lying outside. I stopped by it and said, "Look, badgers." Ingrid said we should come and watch them one day, sit downwind and see them coming out and feeding and playing. They love to play and run around. They make very good paths to follow. I decided we would come back and watch them. Badgers don't hibernate like hedgehogs do. They still go out feeding and digging worms and grubs up as long as the ground isn't too frozen. It was a hard climb back up to Ingrid's bit with all the shopping, and me and Ingrid had to keep stopping and breathing, but Peppa ran the last bit right up to the top and they camped behind the trees. We got the fire going and Ingrid lit our candles and I cooked the steaks on a grill over the fire, and we had them with beans and then we had cake and tea. Then Peppa said, "Ingrid, I bought you a present." And she got three silk scarves out of her plastic bag, and Ingrid just sat there with her mouth open, and then she hugged Peppa really hard and put the scarves on. Peppa said, "I got them in a charity shop." And she gave me all the change from her 20 quid. And she showed me a book and said, "I got a new book too, and a wee reading light that clips on the page so I can read in bed in the bender." Then Ingrid said, "And now I have gifts for you, little girls." She had bought me a monocular, which is like a small telescope that you can use for spotting animals and things quite a long way off. It was fantastic, and it had a magnification of 10 by 40, and it came in a canvas pouch with a wristband. Ingrid said, "Better than binoculars for spotting, and also, I had no idea if your vision was a perfect 20/20, so I decided to get a monocular. It is German, and they make all the best optical equipment. Very good for hunting and watching birds." Without even knowing it was happening, I started crying. It just suddenly rose up in me, and I was greeting for the first time since I was about 8. "I don't know why I did," and Peppa said, "Sal." I didn't sob or shake or make any sound. The tears just started pouring out of my eyes, and I felt a huge hard knot in my chest. Ingrid put her arm around me and Peppa held my hand. I think it was getting a present. I couldn't remember the last time I'd got one. And it was such a brilliant present. Not chocolate, or perfume, or makeup, or something stupid. It was a monocular, which is one of the best things you can ever have if you're like me. Then Ingrid gave Peppa a knife. It was an excellent survival knife, with a serrated cutting edge and a self-sharpening webbing sheath like the Bear Grylls knife. Peppa didn't cry. She jumped up and went, "Yes!" and ran around with it, waving it and stabbing things, and I shouted at her to be careful. She probably is old enough to have a knife, and she would like cutting wood and carving things as long as she didn't cut her fingers off. We both said thank you to Ingrid, and Ingrid said, "You're making my life very happy, Sal and Peppa." After that, Peppa went to bed to try and finish Kidnapped and then start her new book, which was about a boy whose mum died. Ingrid said, "Help me, Sal." And we went over to near her bender and we brought a big birch log to the fire. Ingrid got her knife and said, "Now I show you how to make with birch bark." She scored it right around and then peeled the bark back and it came off and under it was yellow and glistening and smelled sweet. Then she put a wee can with pine resin in it on the fire to heat it. When she had a piece of bark about the size of A4 printed paper, she made four long cuts to the corners, about 6 centimetres long, going diagonal towards the middle. Then she folded the edges in on each other and put her hands around it and closed it in on itself, so it made a bowl with neat square corners. She said, "Silver on the inside, see? To make waterproof. Birch bark is full of oil." She heated the knife in the fire and then spread resin on the joints and held them. She said, "You can stitch this sometimes, but in the cold it will go hard and stick." She put the bowl down, away from the fire. It had a nice flat bottom, and over the edges and the top were all neat. It looked lovely, and after a few minutes, Ingrid got some water from the plastic bottle and poured it in it. And it didn't drip. She gave it to me and said, "Drink." Her hands were big and bony, and she had long nails that she had painted red. All the skin was crinkly, like scrunched up tinfoil, but they were soft like velvet. I said, "Did you like your ma's boyfriends?" She said, "No. But some of them gave me things to eat, and we were very hungry. My mother suffered a lot in the war." "It is not easy to be a mother." I said, "Were you a mother?" She said, "No. I wanted to be a mother, but it was not easy. In DDR after the war, there was no fertility treatment." Ingrid said she went to university in East Berlin, which is part of the DDR, or the GDR, as we called it in Britain. She started studying chemistry, but then she went into training to become a doctor, because in the DDR, there were more opportunities for women to be doctors than there had been before the war with the Nazis. At the university, she met a young soldier called Max, who she fell in love with. He was doing training in electronics, and he was tall and blonde and had huge blue eyes and big strong hands. They were both in the SED, which is the party that ran their country, and it meant they could get jobs and flats and houses. The government built a wall around their part of Berlin to stop people getting out into the west of Germany and the rest of Europe, which was all run by Americans who were enemies of socialism and the German people. Max did patrols along the wall to stop people escaping. The people who wanted to escape thought that life would be better in the American sector where people had more money, but there were more poor people and unemployment and drugs there. Ingrid didn't worry about people escaping because she was so happy learning about being a doctor, and she started to do research into illnesses to find how people got them, and she learned a lot about the body's immune system, which is the white blood cells we have that fight infections and viruses. She was so clever that she discovered things about the immune system and helped to make drugs to fight off diseases and drugs to make the immune system work better. She started working in a medical research place, and Max got a promotion in the army and was in charge of electronic listening machines that they had to try and hear what the Americans were doing in the west of Germany, where they had soldiers ready for another war with Germany. Ingrid said she was happy for a while being married and living in a flat in Berlin with Max. They wanted to have children, but she couldn't get pregnant no matter how much they did sex. They had friends they liked and they went out with, but it was difficult to get all the things you could get in the west of Germany, like TVs and vacuum cleaners and nice cars. But she still felt that she was trying to make Germany a better place and have a country where all the people shared and looked after each other. Max was unhappy they didn't have children, and Ingrid couldn't get pregnant, and soon he started cheating on her with other women. And he drank a lot too. Mostly vodka they got from Russia. Sometimes he went away to Russia or other parts of Germany for weeks, and Ingrid was on her own in the flat and just going to work every day and researching. She changed her job and started working in a people's medical centre where they treated workers and ordinary people who were ill. She saw a lot of people who were sick with illnesses that were easy to cure if they had the medicine and things they needed, but they didn't. She often had to complain to people from the party and to older men doctors that they didn't have the things they needed for making the workers better, and the hospitals were all run down and had dirty wards and cracked windows. Because Max was away a lot, and when he was home he got drunk, they argued, and she started getting depressed. And she knew people who told her about how different it was in the West, and she heard pop music on the radio from the west of Berlin, and everyone seemed to be having a good time there. Then Max told her he had got another woman pregnant, and he was going to leave her and live with the other woman and have children, and she got really depressed, and sometimes even thought about committing suicide. The police and the GDR were called the Stasi, and they watched people they thought were American spies and who they thought wanted to destroy socialism, and they watched anyone who moaned or criticised the government or high-up people in power, and sometimes people who moaned or complained got arrested and put in prison. It was not a democracy like Britain, where you can say that the Prime Minister is a wanker and you hate the Tories and not get into any trouble. In the GDR, you had to say and do what the government said, and not to complain and moan about the country and all the things that were wrong. And you couldn't leave either, unless you were with Stasi people who stopped you from talking to people they didn't like and stopped you from running away to live in another part of Germany or America. One day, some Stasi people came to Ingrid's flat and told her Max had been arrested because he was an American spy and had been sending secrets about the GDR to Americans in West Berlin. Ingrid didn't believe it, and they asked her all about Max, and she told them about the drinking and the other woman, and they asked her if she could think of anyone else she knew who might be an American spy, and she said no. And they said, if you do, and you tell us, we'll get you a better flat and even a car. During this time, Ingrid learned English so she could read English medical books and journals about immunology, and because she was a party member, she got to go on a trip out of the GDR to London to a conference where doctors from all over the world met to talk about their ideas about the immune system. Three doctors from the GDR went to the meeting, which was held in a big house in the middle of London. They got told that they were going to see the capitalist system and that there were crime and drugs and poverty everywhere, and the workers were all suffering because they were not allowed to have a socialist country like the GDR. But when Ingrid got to London, she loved it. There were lights and theatres and red buses and loads of people and expensive shops with beautiful clothes in them. She heard pop music and saw hippies with long hair and weird clothes, and everything was colourful and exciting in London. They had Stasi men with them all the time to stop them running away, and they had to show everything they brought back to the GDR with them in case they brought illegal things or pop records or expensive clothes. But she had no money to spend in London. She just liked all the colourfulness, and she liked the hippies and the music she heard. She said people looked happy, and it felt like they were free. When they got back, they got asked by the Stasi who they had spoken to and what they had said, and Ingrid got asked to tell if the other doctors had spoken to people or had tried to buy expensive clothes or gold or pop records. She said no. She stayed in the GDR for another 10 years until she was 39. She worked for the People's Medical Centre and did research about the immune system, and she lived in a small flat. She was told that Max had got executed for being a spy, and other people she knew got arrested, including both the girls she used to go cycling with, Anna and Irene. Anna worked for the government radio station, and Irene worked at a big power plant in the countryside, and they got taken away and put in prison for being spies. Some of the people in the university got arrested too, and Stasi men started following Ingrid back from the university. And all the time, she was thinking about running away and going to London. It became her dream to go and live there and be free and not get arrested for doing nothing wrong. Sometimes she walked around East Berlin at night and walked along bits of the wall and looked over, and you could see apartment blocks and cranes and buildings on the other side. In the middle was all barbed wire, and there were machine guns to shoot people who tried to escape. She still never really thought about when she was wee or the things that happened to her mum, but inside she was sad and angry, and she got depressed a lot. She listened to the BBC at night, even though it was illegal, and she found out about lots of things going on in Britain, like workers going on strike and punk rock music. In the GDR, she couldn't really trust anyone because people informed on their friends to get better flats and cars. The Stasi still came to see her and asked her about people she knew, but she would never tell on them, and she just said she didn't know anything. But they followed her, and when she got letters or parcels sent from the UK or America about immunology, they had been opened and looked at by the Stasi. Then she wrote a research paper about immunology and the way that the blood cells identify harmful things that they need to kill, which she discovered using a microscope and using lots of tests on rats. The paper made her quite famous, and she was asked to come to London again to another conference. It took ages for the Stasi and the government to give her permission, but in the end they did, because she was making East Germany look good in the West, and they wanted to show how good the medicine they had was. She had three Stasi men with her who pretended they were doctors, and they stayed with her all the time. In London, they had a hotel in Kensington, which was posh and really expensive, and the Stasi men were all really excited about it, and they got drunk in the bar and made Ingrid sit with them while they drank and laughed. They were being watched too by British spies, and Ingrid knew that one of the barmen was a spy because he didn't know how to pour beer and he kept looking at her and catching her eye. She was going to defect. That means she was going to find a policeman and say she didn't want to go back to the GDR and she wanted to stay in London. She told the Stasi men that she had got her period and was feeling ill. They were all drunk and they didn't want to leave the bar, so they let her go up to her room in the hotel, but she didn't go to her room. She walked all through the hotel and found a door at the back that went into a yard and then an alley and then came out on a main street with shops and lots of traffic. It was almost midnight and she walked and walked to make sure they weren't following her, and then she went into a police station and said, "I am an East German doctor and I wish to defect." She didn't have a passport because the Stasi men had it, but she had some letters about the conference and she had her SED party membership card. And she showed the police, and they made her sit in a room for 2 hours and made lots of phone calls. Then two men in suits came and took her away to a big office block in London and sat in a room with her, giving her coffee and cigarettes, and they waited until morning. I went to bed after Ingrid had finished, and she said she'd tell me more tomorrow. But she was tired, and she wanted to go to Magna Bra in the morning and talk to the goddess, and I said okay. I got into bed and Peppa was still awake and she was reading Kidnapped with her wee clippy light, and I said, "Is it good?" She said, "Well, I didn't understand a lot of it because it's old-fashioned, but they get shipwrecked and then Davy gets washed up and stuck on an island and can't get across to the mainland because he doesn't know about tides and he thinks the sea will just stay the same all the time. Then he realises and he escapes and he goes off to find Alan. He has got a button off his coat so everyone knows he's Alan's friend because there are soldiers wanting to catch Alan. I'm not sure why, and then this bad man called the Red Fox gets shot when Davy's talking to him, and he has been stealing money off all the Highlanders in Appin, where Alan is a chief of clan. Davy runs to see who's shot him, and he gets pulled into a bush by Alan, who's watching him, and the Red Fox up a hill. Oh, and Alan said he was going to kill the Red Fox, so Davy thinks he did, but Alan said he didn't. And then they get chased by soldiers all over the moors and heather, and they have to sleep out. Oh, and they get stuck up on a rock in a glen, and they can't get off, or all the soldiers will see them, and they only have brandy to drink, and they need water, and it's really hot. Does it get hot in the Highlands? I said, aye, in the summer, but it rains mostly. Well, they get stuck up this rock with all the soldiers around them and they have to stay there all day getting baked in the sun, and then they have to get off and they run again and hide, and they only have cold porridge to eat. And now they've been captured by another clan man called Clooney McPherson, and he makes them play cards and wins all Davy's money. It's good. It's like us, running and hiding and surviving. I was tired, and Peppa put her light out and fell asleep. I lay there and thought for a while. I was thinking about Ingrid's life, but mostly about her mother. Her ma probably got murdered by a Russian, and she didn't think about it much at all afterwards. Did she love her? It made me think about ma and all the things I did to look after her. From even when I was really wee, I was always making sure she was all right and she had her cans or her bottles, and cleaning up and making sure nobody knew about the drinking or her being asleep. I used to tell people she was working night shifts and she had to sleep all day. I had to watch her too, make sure she didn't be sick laying on her back because you can choke to death on your vomit. I had to watch Peppa, because when Peppa was really wee, she used to climb in and sleep with Ma, and I was worried Ma would roll on her and suffocate her, which can happen, but it's not as common as people think. Ma didn't do anything when Robert hit her, or when he hit us. She just cried, really quiet, and said, "Robert, no." Once I got up, when they were in her army, and Robert had her by the hair and was dragging her round the front room and laughing, I jumped on his back to stop him, and he punched me in the face and made my lips bleed. And Ma just kept going, "Robert, no," over and over again. But it was because she was drinking, and drinking makes you accept the unacceptable. Now she would sober, she'd see what was wrong with it all. She got worse after Robert came. He liked her drinking, and he got her cider and vodka and cans all the time. If she tried not to drink or just have coke, he said, "Don't be so fucking stupid, Claire." And once, he forced her to drink from a bottle of vodka when she said she wasn't going to drink because it was Peppa's birthday and she wanted to be sober when we got home from school. She was drunk when we got back, and she kept saying, "I'm sorry, baby, Robert made me drink. He made me drink the vodka. He forced us." And Robert was laughing, and he went, "Aye, I did." And she laughed too. That night, I made Peppa proper burgers out of mince while Robert and Ma were out of it, and I used seeded baps, like real burgers, and burger sauce made from tomato ketchup and mayonnaise, and she said, "It's just like McDonald's." And then I told her about the Nicht Texting, who I had just read about on Wikipedia, and she loved it. And she said, "What does it mean?" I told her Nacht means night in German and Hexen meant witches, and she said, "Nacht Hexen." Nice word. Chapter 12, Magna Bra. The next day, we got up early and got the fire roaring and made porridge and tea, and Ingrid said she was going to Magna Bra. She had a big purple hat on and a long stick and had all coloured ribbons and scarves in her hair and loads of makeup. Peppa said she looked like a wizard, and I thought she looked more like a witch than before. She said, "I go to speak to the goddess." We went with her, and I took the monocular and the air gun in case I saw some birds or rabbits. It was a long climb up through the woods, and there was no snow on the moor. We went through a little stand of old Scots pines, which had snow on them, and then the sun came out, and it was bright and white like Christmas in films. Once all of Scotland was covered in Scots pine forests, but they were all cut down by people to burn and make houses out of. Scots pines grow big, and some in forests twist all over and bend like old men to get light. In spring, they give pine resin that burns, and Ingrid tapped them and collected it. Going up over the moor towards the high ground, Ingrid told us what she believed. "I believe there is a mother goddess who controls all of nature in the world. In fact, all of nature is the mother goddess, and she nurtures and creates all life. You can talk to her, and you can feel her warmth in the sun and in the earth in spring. You can feel her skin in soft grass and the fur of animals and the feathers of birds. You can taste her in the food you get from nature and the sweet water from a stream. You can smell her in the pine forest and the dying leaves and the honeysuckle and in oak leaves in the rain. You can hear her voice in birdsong and the wind in the trees and the snow creaking under your boots and in owls' cries. And you can see her in the rolling hills and the moor and..." And she stopped and turned to us and smiled and held her finger up. "In your face, Peppa. And in your face, Sal. And in my face. And in the faces of all women." Then she started off again, striding away with her stick, and she said, "I go to feel her in the stones, and ask for her blessing, and ask her for things to lead me to forgiveness for all the things I did wrong in my life." Peppa said, "What's her name?" Ingrid said, "She has no name. She's unnameable and unknowable, but you can feel her." Peppa said, "We should give her a name." I was listening, and then I stopped Ingrid and said, "Will she forgive my ma?" Ingrid said, "Of course. She is forgiveness, because she has never condemned. We condemn ourselves, Sal. She judges nobody." "But you said she would forgive like God. And my ma needs to be forgiven for not being a proper mother? Ingrid said, Do you forgive her? I thought about it, and I said, Not if she drinks again. I forgive her for having an illness. Ingrid looked at Peppa, who was bounding on ahead and swinging her arms and singing. Does Peppa forgive her? I said, She didn't do anything to Peppa, and I was there to look after Peppa, so she doesn't have to forgive her. And Peppa loves her. She wants us to go and get her and bring her to the forest. Ingrid sat down on a rock and looked at me. The goddess will make your mother see that she needs to forgive herself, and you need to forgive yourself too. I said, Why? I haven't done anything wrong. I killed my ma's boyfriend who was called Robert, but that wasn't wrong. He hit my ma, he hit me and Peppa, and since I was 10, he made me suck his cock whenever he wanted to, and he said he was going to start making Peppa do it. So I stabbed him in the throat 3 times and we ran and hid, and I fixed it so they couldn't blame ma. Ingrid put her arm around me and hugged me and held me close to her, and I thought I was going to greet again. Then she said, You did nothing wrong, and the goddess will give you strength and love. Peppa was shouting down at us from up on a ridge and waving, and then she sprinted down towards us grinning. Let's call her Cheryl, she said. And Ingrid thought for a minute and said, Okay. It was still and bright at the stones, and there was no breeze. The cold air was soft and hung over them, and the snow sparkled like jewels. Ingrid stood right in the middle and held up her hands and whispered in German. I walked right round each stone and tried to feel something, but all I felt was the sharp cold in my lungs as I breathed in. Then I felt a rumbly feeling in my belly and a tickly pain shooting down. It went all wet and warm in my pants. I pulled my trousers out and looked. I saw blood. I stood there for quite a while feeling it getting warm and drippy in there. I didn't have any Always Ultra with me. Peppa came running up and said, Are you all right, Sal? I said, I've got my period. Peppa went, Oh, Ingrid, Sal's got a period, in a really loud voice, and then danced off across the snow. Ingrid ran over to me and said, Sal, that is wonderful. It is wonderful. It is the goddess. You are a woman. I said, I need an Always Ultra. I'm in a right mess, Ingrid. The blood was starting to ooze down my legs. Ingrid pulled off her silk scarf that she used for the sphagnum moss and said, Use this. And I stuffed it down my pants to soak it all up. Ingrid put her arms around me again and she said, It is magic. You are magic, Sal. Peppa came running past and said, You can have a baby now, Sal. And then ran off round the stones. We walked back down and I started feeling sore and horrible and my belly ached. Ingrid walked with her arm round me and Peppa carried the stick and the air gun. We got back to the camp and Ingrid boiled a big pan of water and I washed by the fire and got an Always Ultra and put on clean pants and joggers and a vest and a jumper and a fleece. Ingrid put 3 big potatoes in the embers of the fire to cook. I burned my bloody pants in the fire and put my trousers in the burn pool to soak. We sat by the fire while the potatoes cooked, and then we had them with butter and beans and bread. My belly was sore, and I had an ibuprofen and codeine, and Ingrid wrapped a hot rock in a towel, and I held it on my belly, and it felt nice. By the fire, Ingrid got a blanket and wrapped me up, and I stared into the flames and watched the wood glowing almost white in the middle of it, then yellow and orange, then dull red and then black, and wee blue flames flicking out of the orange and running along the logs. I could feel the heat on my face and the warmth in my belly from the stone. My mind went all slow and was not racing thinking, and I breathed in the cold air and the smoke from the sticks. Ingrid washed all the pots in the stream and then stacked them by the fire to dry, and Peppa got a blanket and wrapped it round her and sat on a log and read with her light. It was getting darker earlier and earlier, and I realised we were in November. Ingrid got a log and sat next to me and put her arm around me, and I leaned into her shoulder and she cuddled me. I used to hate people touching me, but I liked Ingrid cuddling me. Then Ingrid said, We shall go and get your mother. Peppa looked up from her book and said, Can we, Sal? Ingrid said, "Where is she?" I said, "She's in an alcoholic rehab place. They put her in there after we ran to get her sober. It's near here. It's 26 miles away." Peppa said, "Is it? Well, can we go now?" Ingrid said, "If she wants to leave, she can. They are voluntary facilities. Does she know where you are?" I said, "No. She thinks we might be dead." Ingrid said, "Well, if she's undergoing a detox and a rehabilitation, it usually takes about 4 weeks. But after this, she will need to have support and go to addiction meetings like Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, where they have a programme of group therapy which can be a very effective treatment." I said, "If she is sober, she could come and live here with us. We could look after her." Peppa got up and started dancing about, excited. "We can make her a bender and teach her how to skin rabbits." I said, "Can you see Ma skinning rabbits, Peppa?" Peppa said, "How can we get her without you being caught, Sal? If they see me or you, we'll get nicked and split up and taken off Ma." Ingrid said, "We can get a car. We can drive to the place. We can watch it. We can wait till we see her. Does she smoke cigarettes?" I said, "Aye." Ingrid went on, "So, we watch. We wait until she comes outside to smoke. They all go outside to smoke in those places. And when she comes outside, I'll speak to her. And I'll ask her if she wishes to come with us. I will do it secretly. Nobody will know. Then she can slip out and meet us, and then we can come back here." I said, "Where do we get a car?" Ingrid said, "I will steal one from the garage in the main road. As long as it's old, I can start it." Peppa was going, "Oh yes! Oh please, Sal, let's do that." I said, "I've got a map where it is." Ingrid said, "Perfect." I said, "How do you steal a car?" Ingrid said, "You need a piece of copper wire and a screwdriver and a hammer to break the window. My boyfriend taught me to do it in the 80s. Peppa said, "Did you have a boyfriend? Was he good looking?" I said, "Can you teach me to do that?" Ingrid laughed and clapped her hands. "Can I tell you the last bit of my story?" We said yes, and Peppa went and got Ingrid a blanket. They interviewed her for weeks and weeks after she defected, and they gave her a flat in London to live in, and she had to tell them everything she knew about the GDR and the SED. She told them all about her research work and the people she knew in Berlin and the Stasi. One of the men interviewing her said, "You are in danger. The Stasi sometimes execute defectors abroad to make an example. It has never happened in the UK, but there is always a first time." Ingrid lived in the flat in London on her own and went to a medical school for a year to learn how to be a doctor in the NHS in Britain. For a while, British spies followed her and listened to her phone when she made calls, but soon they stopped. They thought she might be a spy pretending to be a defector, but she wasn't. She was on her own all the time, and soon she got depressed and started thinking a lot about when she was wee and the things that happened in her flat, and about leaving Germany and not building socialism like she wanted to when she was young. She thought about her mum, and she tried to remember Latvian, but she couldn't. She thought about how scared she was when there was bombing and the Russians came, and she got more and more depressed, and then she had a breakdown and she went all mad and cried all the time and wanted to kill herself. She got put in a hospital for mad people and treated with drugs, and she had therapy, and she talked a lot about her life and especially about her mum and how she felt about the things she had seen and done. She was in the hospital for 2 years. It was a nice big house in the countryside, and after 2 years she was better and they let her leave, and she got a job as a doctor in a hospital in a small town. She looked after people who had things like diabetes and cancer and heart attacks. She still liked hippies and she liked pop music, and she started going to festivals where bands played and everyone took drugs, and she met a load of hippies, and she bought a VW van and went camping at festivals in the summer. They went to Stonehenge, which is big old standing stones in the middle of a heath in England where the sun rises over a special stone on Midsummer Day, and all the hippies and druids go there and get wasted and sing and dance. She felt best and not at all depressed when she was there with all the hippies, and soon she was going to meet them every weekend, and she met a man called Matt, who was younger than her and had dreadlocks. She became his girlfriend, although she said she was old enough to be his mother. There was a thing then called the Peace Convoy, and it was loads of hippies who lived in old vans and buses, and they drove round England and camped wherever they liked and went to festivals. There were hundreds of them, all living in big camps, making music and making baskets and things out of wood and selling them and getting brew money off the government and just staying in the country and not having houses. And eventually, Ingrid joined them. She gave up her job as a doctor and she took her van and went and lived with the hippies. Her and Matt drove round with them in big long lines of vans and buses, and when they stopped, she looked after the people who were ill and helped the hippie girls have their babies. The hippies called her the defector doctor and they painted it on her van. She made lots of them better, mostly from things like infections and skin rashes, but sometimes from taking drugs too much. They lived on land that was owned by lords and rich farmers, and the police used to come and harass them all the time. Sometimes they blocked off roads to stop them getting places, and they were always arresting them for drugs or having bald tyres on their vans. Ingrid learned a lot of things living with the hippies. She learned to make fires without matches and how to weave baskets from willow. She learned about tapping pine and resin and how to dig clay and make pots she bake in a fire to make them waterproof. She bought all her clothes from charity shops and let her hair go long and wild, and she wore feathers and flowers and ribbons in it. She learned all about mending a car from Matt, who was a mechanic, and he showed her how to hotwire a car so you could start it without having the keys. She learned how to change tyres and fix the brakes, and once, her and Matt even took the whole engine out of her VW van and fixed the gearbox. She loved Matt. He was big, and he didn't wash much, and Ingrid used to make him jump into rivers if they were near one, and she always boiled water and washed herself and her clothes because she didn't like being smelly. Then after she had been with the hippies for about 2 years and they had been all over England to different festivals and living at different campsites, they tried to get to Stonehenge for a festival on the summer solstice, which was June 21st and is the longest day. Lots of vans and buses tried to drive to Stonehenge for the solstice, but the police blocked all the roads and they held them up and stopped them leaving, and they made lots of them drive into a field. It was a warm summer afternoon and the hippies got into a big crowd and tried to walk over to Stonehenge to try and have their festival. Then hundreds of police with riot shields and batons attacked them. There were about 700 hippies and twice as many police who had come from all over Britain to beat them up. They charged into them with police horses and batons and smashed people's heads and hit women and children and even pregnant women. Ingrid got punched in the face by a police when she was trying to help a girl back into her bus. The police surrounded all the hippie buses and smashed the windows and slashed the tyres and smashed them all up. Ingrid and Matt got arrested and Matt had his arm broken by two police who kicked the shit out of him while he was lying on the ground. Ingrid fought two police trying to take him away and she got kicked over and then handcuffed. Hundreds of the hippies got arrested and they were all taken to stations in towns nearby and held and charged with obstructing the police and assault on the police. It was the most people who had ever been arrested in one go in the history of England. Ingrid said the papers called it the Battle of the Beanfield, but Ingrid said it was more like a massacre. Then they let them all go, and Ingrid and Matt walked back to the field and found their van, which had been smashed up and had all the windscreen broken. They eventually got their van going and they drove off and left the rest of the hippies. Matt had to go to the hospital and have his arm put in plaster. Then they camped outside a small town for a few days and Matt got some bits and fixed the van up and they decided to go north. The government put fences up around Stonehenge and built a visitor centre and charged people money to go and look at the stones, and no hippies were allowed to go there ever again. After that, Ingrid got depressed again. She thought Britain was safe and the police were nice here and didn't attack people for no reason and didn't put them in prison for nothing or force them to go where they didn't want to. She thought that only happened in the GDR. Or in Germany, where there were Nazis. But it was happening in Britain, which was a democracy, and which she thought was free, and people were allowed to do what they liked. She got more and more depressed as they went north. They stayed in the Lake District for a few weeks in a lay-by, and Matt got them some money by working in a garage fixing cars. Then some men from the council made them move, and they said they'd get arrested if they stayed in the lay-by. Ingrid said they headed for Scotland because there is a different law in Scotland and you can camp wherever you like and you can't be moved on or arrested as long as you don't make a mess or burn down trees. She was still depressed and they struggled to get money for food and petrol, and it was coming on winter, but the country was beautiful, much more beautiful than England, and it had proper mountains and bigger lochs and moors. Ingrid said she had never been anywhere as beautiful and she liked Scottish people, although she didn't understand the way they spoke at first. They got all the way into the Highlands and found places to camp and stay in their van, and they spent the first winter in a forest near Fort William, and they could see Ben Nevis from their van window. It snowed and it was cold, but they had a wood burner in their van and they got brew money after a while. Matt got a job working in the forest, cutting logs and trees with a chainsaw and driving a big tree cutting machine. Then they rented a wee cottage for a few months and they had more room, like a proper bed, and Ingrid made clothes and did basket weaving. In the spring, they fixed the van up and went off again and drove all over Scotland and then got ferries to the Orkney Islands and went and saw all the standing stones and the 4,000-year-old houses and the burial chambers where old chiefs of tribes got buried with all their families. They stayed in Orkney for a winter, in their van, and Matt worked for a farmer and Ingrid made baskets and sometimes sold them in the town. But it rained all the time for the whole winter. Ingrid sometimes got